Hello, Adam.
Hi, Debbie, how are you?
I am so happy to be speaking with you again. We had
Yes.
so much fun talking about Dottie and Soul.
I remember.
And I gotta tell you knocked it out of the park again with Re-Election.
Oh, thank you.
This film, it has so much energy. It once again, so much heart. You have this great gift. It is obvious with these two, with Dottie and Soul and now Re-Election, you have a great gift for melding truth and warmth and heart with comedy and just wrap it all together so it comes out just so beautifully. You've got great themes happening here. Talk about diversity and demographics and crossing a generational divide on top of that. You bring everything together in this timely and topical, truly melting pot, microcosmic look at the world. And I just love what you have done here.
Well, Debbie, that means so much to me, really, and I really appreciate how how much deeply you take these movies on and in, and yes, I mean that was certainly intentional. I mean, this is a movie about politics. It's a movie about American politics, and it was very important to me that the film looked like America, that
Yeah.
the demographics of America were represented, and that was, meat is Native American. Everybody in the movie was trying to represent the whole country.
Well, and I think you definitely succeeded here, but you do it with so much heart and so much truth. And that's one of the beautiful things. You're not slamming anybody, you're not ripping anybody apart. You're digging into the core elements, really, of what makes us better people. The kindness, watching the relationship that you have on screen between yourself and Bex as Noah. Wow, that is the heart of the film. Jimmy and Noah.
Thank you.
That just,
I
and,
think so.
oh,
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
no, I was going to say, and Bex is just amazing.
Amazing. Yeah. Truly.
You know,
Yeah,
when
I mean, I think that's what it is, right? Because it's like, I think we talked about this on Dottie, but I grew up in Texas and have lived here, on the coast and, for 20 years. And I think for me, what it's about is really what makes us people. Because I think we get so caught up in all the specific little social flags that people get all pissed off about, right? And they get into their camps and they say, "No, I believe in that. No, I don't believe in that. Or I believe in that." But really, if you all those things are just things that we've learned. Those are all just things that somebody at one point exposed us to, and we formed an opinion, and then we decided we were on that side or the other. It's almost like I have a 7-year-old son, and like he'll make up his mind that he wants to do this one way based on the very limited information that he has, and then he just holds to it, because he's a human being, and we all do that, not just at 7, but at 47 and at 77. And I think if we can strip the sort of biases away and just say, wait a second, where was I before I determined what camp I was in? And I think that's where the commonality lies,
Yeah.
And anyway, so that's this movie is really about finding those commonalities.
You cross the generational divide, and as you just touched on as well, I love how you incorporate in here. Yeah, it's one thing that here's Jimmy, he's in his 40s or whatever, he's going back to high school, but he's got to learn about social media. He has to learn how to TikTok. And I'm just laughing because I'm 67, I still don't know how to TikTok. And I don't know if I even should, but I love how you touch on all of these things. You've got Tony Danza, who is outstanding as Stan, and his sensitivity always comes across so beautifully in every role he takes. But here
Yeah, I
he
mean, he's
he's stuck. Stan is stuck in the past. He
yes.
is memorabilia himself at this point.
Yes. Well, he is, but so is Jimmy. I
Yeah.
mean, look, they're both memorabilia. They're both Jimmy's stuck in 1995, and Stan is stuck, I don't know how far back,
Yeah.
But, you know, this movie is about people that are standing in their own way. I mean, look, I'm not subtle about it. I put it in a huge quote that right at the top, what a man thinks of himself, that is which determines his fate. You know, and I think these people are standing in their own way. You know, Stan is standing in his own way. Jimmy is standing in his own way. Noah is standing in their own way. Shauna is standing in her own way. You know, and I think so many of us, myself included, have gone through plenty of time where we're standing in our own way.
Yep.
And it's really about realizing that, no, fixation on the past gets us nowhere. The past is the past. It is gone. And now we are still alive. Thank goodness. We still have another breath. We still have another chance. We still have another day. And let's use it. Let's do something, you know.
And that's one of the beautiful things that you do is you show us what happens when you take advantage of that new chance, that second chance or third chance or fourth chance. And we yes. see it with every single primary character we have in the film. We see it with Fiza. We see it with Meat. We definitely see it with Shauna. Obviously, Noah exceeds all expectations. Manish, even. We get character growth in Manish, which at the beginning of the film, you think it's hard to believe, but it happens. But you yeah. show us what happens when you take that second chance, when you get out of your yeah. own way. And that is one of the most important things to come from this movie, Adam. It is
I really appreciate that. And, you know, I think there's a thing my dad told me when I was a kid, that opportunity comes all the time. You know, we think that, you know, we only get one shot, you know, the Eminem, we only get one shot to not miss your chance to blow. No, you get a lot of shots.
Mm-hmm.
You get a lot of shots. And you got to learn from the ones that happened before. And like I say, as long as you're still out here, as long as you still have it, you have a chance to do it differently. And that's what Jimmy's whole TikTok is about. Like, we can make a better choice the next time.
Yeah.
We don't have to keep making the bad choice over and over again. We all know deep in our heart what the right choice is and what the wrong choice is, and we can make the choice to do the brave thing, but we just have to make that choice. It's never too late. If we're still on the earth, it's not too late.
Yeah. You know, and hand in hand with the great story and your messaging that you have happening here, once again, your production values are rock solid, Adam. And they just, you're working with Jay Visit again, your cinematographer on Dottie and Soul. The two of
yes.
you create such a visual energy that soars and just elevates this film even higher. We feel the enthusiasm. We see Jimmy's energy grow and become, it explodes and then it also gets reined in. But we see all of this, and it's so visceral that you feel it, but you feel it with a smile on your face the whole time. But then the two of you counter this with some extremely powerful monologues that we hear, especially the one in the third act from Noah, which is amazing. Then, of course, we have Jimmy's very heartfelt TikTok plea or admission in the third act of the film. As well as Tony Danza's Stan gets a really fantastic parental moment where he even gets another chance to step up as a dad. But your visuals are light, they're bright, they're energetic. They are, and your camera, what Jay does with the camera, with the Dutching, we get power shots in there. What were the two of you looking for in this film? With the visual grammar.
Well, first of all, thank you, Debbie. You're such an informed audience member. I remember that from our interview last time. But look, Jay is a gifted photographer.
Yeah.
And what I try to do is express to him emotionally what I want it to feel like. Certainly in the visual language, you know, I'm always, well, at least in these last two films, referencing an earlier nostalgic time of movie making where things were bright and things were light, and things were fun, and it's not so gritty and handheld and then texturized. You know, it wants to feel fun, right? And then within that fun visual world, we're able to have these bigger conversations like the ones we were just having. But I think it's got to have that palatable package. So So, like, even, like, when we talk about, you know, and for me, I'm a real stickler about tone, mm-hmm. especially in these kinds of movies. And so when the movie takes a darker turn, I mean, you know, you have that sequence when Jimmy is, you know, giving his big speech in the cafeteria, and then you have everybody running through the hallways. Well, so I said to Jay, I said, it needs to feel like a horror movie here because this is what, this is horror for Noah. From Noah's perspective, their world has been turned upside down, and this has become a horror movie.
Yeah.
And I want it to feel stylized, and I want it to feel crazy, and I want it to feel chaotic, but it must remain within the framework of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so then Jay and I had a lot of conversations. I said, I would love there to be a way to have lights flashing. I would love there to be a way reds. And so then we talked about it. And I think it was Jay's idea, like, well, let's have them flip the fire alarm. You know, and so then we could really give, that gave us some narrative permission to really then lean into the whites and the reds and the chaos and of that, which made it feel a lot darker, you know, but yeah. still within the palette of what I was creating.
And that's a great thing, and I'm glad you brought it up. Your use of color here is really well done. Those reds, and of course, then the more somber, cooler blues in Stan's the memorabilia store,
yeah.
and of course, the light over bright and even a sickly yellowish tone in the school superintendent's office. Because let's face it, anybody has to go to the school superintendent's office or the principal's office, it never looks pretty. So you made sure that we feel the tension, the unsettling color that you have in there, which is kudos to your production designer with working around all
yes.
of that. Just absolutely wonderfully, wonderfully done.
Thank you. Yes, you know, I'm very intentional about color. You know, that's something that's really, and Amy Lee Wheeler, who was my production designer, who was truly, truly gifted. You know, we talked a lot. Obviously, we're shredding in reds and whites and blues because of the patriotism. We certainly lean into that hard when
yeah.
we're doing Manish and his stuff. But yes, when we're in Stan's world, it is. It's cooler shades of blue. It's the color has been lost from Stan's life. And then when Jimmy, you know, finds his sort of second act guy, then it's all of a sudden it's gold. It's real shiny. He's got the gold shoes. You know, and he ultimately has to settle into, at the end, he's in sort of a neutral colors because it's less about look at me and more about let me help others. And I think it makes him more settled. It makes him, you know, more attractive, you know, as a human being. And I think that was also the visual language of the film.
And it makes him a little more grown up, too.
For sure.
And you mentioned mentioned one of the coolest things that really comes out of, you don't expect to see this, when Jimmy emerges in his gold glitter, not even lamé, but gold glitter
yes.
jacket and the shoes. Kudos to your costume designer, to Amit. I loved Amit's work on Lost on a Mountain in Maine, which is totally different from what the vibe
yes.
you've got going here. But what kind of conversations did you have in terms of costuming and using the costuming? Because that is that's another visual touchstone that shows us a transformation within Jimmy.
Yeah, I mean, we were very intentional. Amit and I talked about each character's arc, you know, day by day, what they were wearing, how it was growing. As Jimmy gets to that sort of, you know, gold-jacketed version of himself, you know, I told Amit, I said, push it as far as you can. Find me the most outlandish, most flamboyant, because this is his moment where, look, this guy has been hiding for 25 years in a shed behind his father's memorabilia store. And now he is stepping into the light. So step into the light. So he kept showing me more stuff. He's like, well, do you really want to have gems all over the shoes? I said, yes. You know, each thing. I said, put them in a necklace. Put them in the, give them the roar. But don't use the regular red, white, and blue roar. Make it a gold roar. You know, have him be, you know, just larger than life. And I think it shows because Jimmy gets caught up in
yeah.
the ego. I mean, look, we see this with politicians all the time, right? You see somebody, you're like, oh, 10 years ago, he was such a nice guy, and he said so many things I believed in, and now I don't know what he's talking about, you know. because people get wrapped up in their own ego. They get wrapped up in their own power. And that's what happens to Jimmy, right? He gets wrapped up in it. And ultimately he has to come down from it. But to come down from it, he's got to be at some point really high up. And that's what I think Ahmet was really great at helping us find through costume.
I mean, it was fantastic. And I love the costuming for Bex's character of Noah. That is just so, it is so delightful. It is individual, it is creative, and so stylish.
How about that last suit?
Oh my God, and the bow tie. The bow tie was great.
Yes.
But, you know, you brought up another element here of Jimmy living in the shed out back, and the shed is red.
Right.
So it's another one of those, the metaphoric stop, what the heck are you doing, Jimmy, moments.
Yes.
Now,
because
of the speed and energy of this film, and this one I think is a little more tonally fast-paced and emotionally fast-paced than Dottie and Soul. So you bring in Elizabeth Merrick as your editor. I love Elizabeth's work in television.
Yeah.
I mean, she's cut some of the best comedies, you know, Murphy Brown reboot, 30 Rock. So I'm curious how the editing process was for the two of you. Because of the energy that you need, but also the moments of reflection. And you've got so many moving parts here. So I'm curious about the editing process.
Well, you know, Liz is, you know, was one of my very favorite people to work with throughout this process. I mean, she is such a sweetheart of a human being and so, so gifted as an editor. And, you know, we have a very similar sensibility. I mean, she grew up in the Midwest. She grew up in Cleveland. You know, my family's from Ohio. I know I grew up personally in Texas, but my parents are from Ohio. So there's a sort of Midwestern sensibility that she brought. And I thought was, you know, look, we're trying to make a movie for everyone. And we're trying to make a movie that everyone can relate to. And so she understands what I want because she feels the same way independent of me. Which is that, you know, we don't want to push too far on this edge or on this edge, because here, if we're in this safe's not the right word, if we're in this more comfortable center lane, then that gives us permission to really ask the hard-hitting question.
Yeah.
And because look, if you're making a Michael Moore documentary, and no shade there, I made an amazing documentary, but you're appealing to a very specific audience, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes the other audience isn't going to see it at all, and they just won't watch it. They say, oh, you know, I see it now, Paul. Oh, you feel that way? I won't watch it. Oh, yes, Fox News, I won't watch it. Oh, MSNBC, I won't watch it. But if we can make a movie that feels like, hey, this is a fun, light, fast paced, like you're saying, energetic, you know, comedic, funny movie, then maybe people can actually start having some of these bigger conversations. It's like, you know, I'm a political buff and a history buff, and Abraham Lincoln's great gift as a politician was that he wasn't particularly intimidating. You know, people thought he was kind of his pants didn't really fit, he walked weird, he looked weird, his face was droopy, and somehow he was the one that was able to accomplish, you know, the Emancipation Proclamation. And he was that guy. So I think sometimes putting things in a more palatable package is more effective than less.
Mm-hmm. Well, you definitely do that here. Now, I'm curious for you, Adam, because people might not realize this, but number one, you are not a high school dropout. You did not have to go back to high school. You, in fact, you've got a bachelor's in drama from Duke, a master's in acting from Yale. Was it difficult for you in writing this script to imagine yourself or put yourself in a mindset of somebody who really fell apart and did nothing when he dropped out of high school?
Not at all, because the feeling that Jimmy has is universal. It's a feeling of I have not done enough. I'm stuck. And certainly that's something that I have felt in my life many times. Mm-hmm. I have not done enough. Where did I go wrong? Why did I do that instead of that? And the fixation on it. And then certainly I have friends and I have interaction with people that say, oh, if I had just done this one thing. And some of the things that people say, if I had just done this one thing, my whole life would be changed. I mean, it's out there, you know. And when I was first writing the script, I was talking to an acting coach, and he said, well, I'm really not sure that just losing the election is enough. I think something else must have to have happened for him to be so stuck. And I said, no, I don't think so. People can really attach stories to whatever they want to. And I think the simplest little thing is enough, more than enough, for this guy to have completely unraveled.
That's amazed me at how spot on, how authentic and honest Jimmy's mindset is, knowing who you are. And that just it just really amazed me that you could get into that mindset of a Jimmy Bauer.
I really appreciate that.
So now you've got two feature films under your belt, comedy, heart in both of them, great messaging. So what's next? Do you move into drama? Do you stay with comedy? Where do you go from here, Adam?
Well, thank you for asking that. It's both. So I'm working on a TV show that I'm doing with Rizwan Manjoo, who plays Governor Singh. I've written it. It's a 6-episode season. I've written the first 3 episodes. It's about Jews and Muslims that play poker together, called Poker Sunday. So that's what we want to do. And that's right on theme with Dottie and with re-election. You know, it's a comedy that's about something, a bigger and, you know, like I say, but still does it in sort of my package of comedy. But to your other point, I also am attached, to a new project that I'm going to direct, which is darker. And I'm also attached to something that I'm going to act in, which is much darker. So I think these movies have given me an opportunity, and people have brought me, and I'm so grateful, opportunities now where I can do things just as an actor, just as a director, and also continue to create content for myself, which follows the same trajectory of these two movies. But ultimately, you know, for me, it is about telling stories that have a social consciousness, and whatever genre those are in, I want that part to be consistent.
So one last question for you, Adam. If you had to pick one moment in re-election that you love the most, that speaks to you the loudest, what would that be?
You know, the gut reaction, you know, sometimes it's got to go with my gut. The first thing that popped into my head is the scene with me and Tony when he says we have a sacred responsibility to ourselves. You know, and he says it so beautifully, and right before he, you know, fires me, I guess I'm ruining it for whoever's not seen the film yet, but he says we have a sacred responsibility to ourselves. And I think that is really something that we forget about sometimes. We get lost in familial obligation or I got to do this for this person or for this person or that, and whatever stories we've told ourselves, but we have a responsibility to ourselves and our own lives. And, you know, we get one life, so we have to make the most of it.
Well, you certainly are making the most of yours, Adam. And once again, you just roar as a director. I got to tell you,
roar. I so appreciate you. I really do. I appreciate your support over both these films. Oh, it means a lot.
Adam, thank you so much. I can't wait to see your next projects, especially those darker ones. I really want to see what's happening there with you.
Yes. We'll keep you posted.
I'll be looking. Adam, thank you so much, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday season.
Same to you, Debbie. Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.